And today's episode 22. Hold on, I'm just going to pin myself here. There we are. Episode 22. So yesterday we were talking about Krishna, about Indra flooding Vrindavan and trying to kill everybody in Vrindavan and what the situation was. And today we're going to continue and see what happens next. So we're going to cover chapters 25 and 27. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshama. Krishna, 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 Prahima. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshama. Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Prahima. All right, so chapter 20. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Right. So yesterday we were hearing about how some Vartika clouds were extending from Swargaloka, the heavenly planets, all the way down to which one? Rasal-tala? One of the subterranean heavenly planets. Anyways, they were going all over. They were covering multiple planetary systems. And they were blocking out the sun to the extent that it was completely black. Black as the bottom of a black pot. And the rain was coming down like pillars. Yeah, or like, you know, from a fireman's hose or something. It's like a lot of water with the high pressure. And it was pounding down on the backs of the bulls and cows who were putting their bodies over top of their calves to protect them. And their backs were swollen from just being pelted by hailstones and all the water. And everybody just turned to Krishna. Everyone just took shelter of Krishna. And Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhaga, Twannatha, Gokulam, Prabhu. Please, Krishna, you are most fortunate one. Please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra and deliver us too, because you're Bhakta Vatsala. You're very affectionate to your devotees and you always save your devotees. So please save us.
And particularly affectionate to cows.
Yeah, and particularly affectionate to cows. So save the cows and while you're at it, save us. So then Krishna, he can't stand to see his devotees suffer. And this is what he's saying. And I'm starting from text 18. He says, I must therefore protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. So he's like, yes, you're right. I've taken a vow to protect my devotees. And so then thinking like that, he goes there and with his left hand, he just zoop, picks up Govardhan Hill just as easily as a child picks up a mushroom. And then he says to everyone, mother, father, oh residents of Raj, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. So it's described how the people are thinking, well, Govardhan Hill is not big enough to fit all the cows. There's like literally millions of cows and a whole village, everybody under there. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Govardhan Hill, by being touched by Krishna, became so ecstatic that it expanded. And it expanded to just the right size to accommodate everybody there. So everybody was there. And when Krishna picked it up, the dirt was falling, a little bit of dirt was falling all around the hill from the bottom. And then that made like walls, it made like, you know, dikes, so that the rain was falling off and it wasn't coming under. It was like totally protected. Yep. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. And it says here that, because the hill was touched by the hand of Krishna, it acquired inconceivable power And it felt the hundreds of deadly thunderbolts thrown upon its back by Indra to be offerings of soft, fragrant flowers. So Govardhan didn't suffer at all. At times, Govardhan was not even aware that the thunderbolts were striking. Yeah. And it says that when Govardhan expanded itself, the hill didn't expand just like, length and width, but also height. So the hill grew so high that the top of the hill was above the clouds. So then all the animals, it says here, the deer, the wild hogs, other animals, birds on the hill, climbed up to the peaks, which were above the clouds, which weren't getting rained on. It was just nice up there. So everybody was safe. And the people are thinking, oh my God, that's a big hill. What if it, this little Krishna is just holding that hill there? What if it slips? What if it falls? We'll all be crushed. So Krishna reassures them. He says, have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand. And don't be afraid either for the wind and the rain. Your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. So he doesn't say that I've done it. He just says everything's going to be okay. And so then they all went under the hill, and there was plenty of room there for everybody. Even the wagons were under there, and all their stuff. So all the domestic animals were under there. And then by Krishna's potency, they were all very happy under there. Nobody felt hungry or thirsty or tired or anything at all. Because they were just looking at Krishna. They were so happy to just be there with Krishna. It was rare that the gopis could spend all day and all night. I mean, nobody could spend all day and all night with Krishna. You know, the boys saw him during the day, but not at night. And the gopis, like up to this point, they barely saw him at all. You know, there was Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis. That was like the only time they were really with him. Otherwise, they were just seeing him from a distance. And then Yashoda and Nandaraj, Krishna's home at night in the early morning, but then he's out all day. So nobody's always with Krishna. But this time now they're all there, 7 days, 7 nights, just with Krishna, looking at Krishna to their heart's content. And Krishna also, he's reciprocating with everybody. Everybody's feeling like Krishna's just looking at me. Although everybody is simultaneously thinking that Krishna's only looking at them.
It sounds like a really fun camping trip.
What's that?
It sounds like a really fun camping trip.
Yeah, they're all there with Krishna under the hill. So then, Indra saw this, and after some time, he was seeing that the rain was not doing anything. It was like it wasn't touching anybody. It wasn't harming the animals. It wasn't harming the plants. It wasn't harming Govardhan. Because the people under Govardhan, it was just absolutely useless. It was having no effect. And they were getting tired because it was going on and on and on for over 7 days. And they were just, the clouds were getting, their reserves of rain and thunder were finishing, and Indra was getting worn out. And he said, look, it's just not working. He told them, just give up. Just throw in the towel. It's not happening. So then the rain stopped, the wind stopped, the sky became clear. And Krishna told everybody, now you can go out, everybody, and there's no need to be afraid. All the rain has stopped, and the rivers which were flooded have, the floods have subsided. And so everybody got their stuff and they started going out. The men went out first, and the women and children, the elderly people came afterwards, the animals came afterwards. And then when everybody was safely, then Krishna just gently put the hill right back down in its own place. Yeah, and then everybody was so happy that Krishna had done that. You know, they were just like marveling over this great feat that Krishna had done. And they all went forward and greeted Krishna according to their relationship. So the elder ones were embracing him and asking him if he was okay. Like, that was really hard, wasn't it? Are you all right? How are you feeling? Is your little finger sore? Are you hungry? And then the juniors were bowing down to him, and the cowherd women are giving him yogurt and auspicious things as tokens of honor and giving benedictions on him, like, may you live long, may you have good health, may you be protected from danger, and like that. Yeah, they were smelling his head and kissing him. Oh yeah, they were like massaging his arm and his fingers from his left arm that were holding up the hill. And Krishna's friends were just laughing and joking with him, like, yo, bro, that was so cool. So, yeah. Then in the heavens, the demigods were also praising Krishna and showering down flowers, all the siddhas and gandharvas and charanas, and they were playing their conch shells and kettle drums, and the gandharvas were singing. And then everybody just kind of went back to their business. You know, the cowherd boys with Balaram, they went to go tend the cows. The cowherd girls went home singing all about Krishna and what he had just done. And it says here, Gayantya iyur mudita hridi sprishaha. Hridi means the heart and sprisha means touched. So, and Gayantya means sing. So it says they were, and muda means happily. They were very happily singing about Krishna, who had touched their hearts so deeply. Very sweet. Okay, so chapter 25 finishes like that. And then chapter 26 is like a kind of like a review of all of Krishna's pastimes up to this point. And then we get into chapter 27, which is Indra and Mother Sarabi offer their prayers. So after Krishna lifted the hill, then all the other demigods were happy. Everybody was happy, except one person was not happy, and that was Indra. Indra was just completely ashamed and humiliated and frustrated and peeved. He was just like really not in a good state. And he's wondering, now what am I going to do? So, I mean, he realized that what he had done was just thoroughly horrendous. And mainly he was afraid. He was afraid now because he saw that Krishna is more powerful than him. And so if you try to kill somebody who's more powerful than you, along with all of their, you know, friends and family and pets, then you could be in trouble. Because that person's more powerful than you, and you just try to kill them, and now they could very easily just kill you if they wanted to. Yep. So that's what he's worried about. And he had seen that Krishna had killed demons like easily. So now he's thinking, uh-oh, if Krishna decides to punish me, I am really going to be hurting for certain. So then he's thinking what to do. I need to apologize quick before he punishes me. And he was thinking he wanted to get some guidance on how to do this effectively. So he thought, Brahma's senior to me, I'll go to Brahma. And he thought also, Brahma has also had experience with this, because he, you know, did a similar thing not too long ago, stealing the boys and the calves, locked them in a cave, and then he had to apologize. So he knows how it's done, and he can help me. But Brahma, he's like, no, I'm not going there, because, you know, the wound is still a little raw from the wound hasn't quite totally healed, and I think if Krishna sees you and I together, it's going to be like, oh, so two offenders are coming at once. So he said you should go with somebody who's going to really evoke Krishna's compassion, and that person is Sarabi. So Sarabi is a cow that lives in the heavenly planets, and so Indra goes to Sarabi and says, Sarabi, I really need your help. Please come with me to go see Krishna, because I need to apologize, and I need you to be there. So Sarabi's like overjoyed, because she, you know, she's a cow and she loves Krishna, and she knows Krishna loves cows, and she's really happy to go see Krishna. So she goes, but she gives him some advice. She says, Indra, when you go there, because Indra always goes everywhere on his elephant. He's this huge white elephant named Airavata. She says, when you approach him, don't go on Airavata. Get off your high horse, basically. Get off your high elephant and go on foot. Just go alone. So Indra takes that advice. So now Krishna, he's very kind. So we see here that even though Indra did this horrible, horrible thing, like vicious, violent, horrendous thing, Krishna had consideration for him because he's a devotee. So Krishna, on the pretext of, he told his friends, he said, you guys go take care of the cows. I'm just going to go around the backside of Govardhan Hill and look at the damage to see if the lightning bolts have damaged the other side of the hill. And I'll be back soon. So his whole thing was he wanted to be alone so that Indra could apologize in a private place, in private. So it shows that Krishna, he's not into public humiliation. So that's a good thing to bear in mind. You know, if somebody makes a mistake, we shouldn't call them out for doing that in front of other people, that they're going to be, you know, publicly humiliated and really embarrassed and just feel really discouraged. But we should, you know, the appropriate person, may not be us, the appropriate person should, you know, take them aside in private and say, oh, I heard about this. Can you explain what happened? And like that. So in private. So Krishna, in Prabhupada's time, when devotees would speak about another devotee's fall down or another's mistake and just like announce it to everybody, one time Prabhupada got to know that someone had done that and he was very upset. He was like, now you know what you've done. You've made it impossible for this devotee to come back. You know, like, okay, everybody makes mistakes. So he made a mistake. So he broke a principle and he fell down and he's gone away. But now because you've, you know, totally, what's the word? You've basically slandered him. Like you've told everybody what he did wrong. Now it's going to be very hard for him to come back because whatever temple in ISKCON he goes to, because everyone knows about it, they're all going to be like, ew, you know, you did that. Whereas if they just kept it private, then when he came back, they'd be like, oh, you came back, you know, and we're missing you. And they wouldn't know anything about it. So, yes. So Krishna wanted to make it as easy as possible for Indra to surrender and to pick up his service where he left off and just get back to normal devotee life. So, yeah. Then, now, an amazing thing here is that Indra, he got off his elephant, he went there, he approached Krishna in that solitary place behind Govardhan Hill. But before Indra could even say anything, Krishna apologized to Indra.
Oh,
that's like, I mean, it just shows what a magnanimous personality Krishna is. That as soon as he sees Indra, he says, oh, Lord Indra, it's good that you came. I wanted to apologize to you because I think I've offended you by stopping the sacrifice. Because every year my family would do the sacrifice and I know you're expecting it. And I'm sorry if you felt slighted by what I did. And so when Krishna said that, then Indra was just like, oh my God, this is just like too much. You know, I came here to apologize and he's apologizing to me. This Krishna is just really so sweet. You know, he's just so gracious. And that's the nature of Krishna. Krishna is really wonderful. So anyways, Indra, he starts to apologize. Yeah. And he says, so this is what he says to Krishna. First, he glorifies Krishna. He says, Vishuddha sattvam tava dhamma shantam tapo mayam dvashta rajas tamaskam maya mayoyam gunasam prabaho na vidyate te grahananubandana. That the first thing he says is Vishuddha Sattvam. This is text 4. That you are completely in the transcendental platform. You are untouched by the modes of material nature. And you're a manifestation of pure goodness. And then Tapomayam, you're shining with knowledge. And then Dvashta Rajas Tamaskam, that you're free from passion and ignorance, the modes of passion and ignorance. And he says, in fact, the modes of material nature cannot touch you at all. So he's seeing the difference between himself and Krishna because he realizes how he was so influenced by the mode of ignorance, thinking that he was the Lord and that Krishna is an ordinary person, thinking that the Vrajavasis were puffed up because of prestige and that's why they stopped worshiping him and that's why they needed to be punished. But actually, he's the one who was puffed up with false pride and he needed to be punished. So he was just seeing totally opposite of what the facts were, what the real situation was. So that's a symptom of the mode of ignorance. And then the mode of passion is just, you know, excessive and just intense retaliation, basically. So it's just a very passionate, like impulsive, without really thinking, without, you know, just like, they're not going to worship me, I'm going to kill them, you know, and just totally over the top response. So he's saying that although I was heavily influenced by the modes of ignorance and passion, Krishna is not. He's totally above all that. But then now from his new, you know, perspective, where he's seeing things as they are, he's thinking that, well, other people might become confused because if Krishna is not influenced by the mode of ignorance, then why did he stop the sacrifice, which is a Vedic thing, you know, which is a Vedic ceremony that is a tradition? Why did he stop that? It's a good thing, right? So it looks kind of ignorant that, you know, yeah, don't do that, doesn't matter. And how is Krishna not influenced by passion if he kills so many demons? Because he saw him very passionately stomping over all over the heads of Kaliya. He saw him picking up the Dainikasura's, you know, donkey friends and whirling them around and throwing them in trees and having a good old time doing that. So it looks very passionate, right? And then in the next verse, he addresses this. He says that to Krishna, he says that your punishment of anyone, including me, is not due to the modes. It's not an act of passion or ignorance, but it's just your mercy. Because even when you punish people, it's just for their benefit. And that Krishna, he calls him Jagat Isha, the Lord of the universe. So just like, because he's the Lord of the universe, he takes care of the universe, just like a father takes care of the family, the children, that he might sometimes lovingly punish them, but it's to help them to be better people, to curb them from behavior that's going to basically give them a miserable life if they continue like that. So he says, you punish the mischievous just to instruct them. And by punishing Indra also, he instructs not only Indra, but all the demigods and also everyone, the whole world, including us. So we should never, become proud, falsely proud, thinking that we are the Lord, that we are the controllers, that we can do what we want, and that people should worship us and that kind of thing. So then, text 8 is really nice. This is where Indra really, like, he says, engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offended you. O Lord, may you forgive me. My intelligence was bewildered, but let my consciousness never again become so pure. So in this, so impure. So what we see in this verse is those three steps that we're talking about in Nectar Instruction class, the recognition. So he's recognizing his mistake. He's saying, I was engrossed in pride over my ruling power, and I was ignorant of your majesty, and I offended you. So he's recognizing that this was really bad. And then the remorse, he's apologizing, you know, and he's asking for forgiveness. So he's feeling this wasn't right. My intelligence was bewildered. This was not the thing to do. And then rectification, he's considering that I don't really know how to fix this, this problem that I have of pride, you know. So he's asking for Krishna's help. He's saying, please let my consciousness never again be so impure. It's like, you help me, please purify my consciousness, remove this false pride. And then, because, the way the acharyas comment on this is that even though he's asking for forgiveness, but because his mood is fearful, it means that he doesn't have full faith in Krishna. Because if one actually had total faith that Krishna is our well-wisher, then you wouldn't be afraid of him. Right, if you actually believe that Krishna's punishment was his mercy, you wouldn't be afraid of being punished, right? Because you think, yay, more mercy, you know, give me more mercy, I need the mercy. However it comes is just fine, because you know what I need. And yeah, it's not about living a comfortable life, it's about getting the mercy and making spiritual advancement, becoming purified, loving Krishna. But he's fearful, and that shows that he's not 100% sincere in his prayer. Basically, he's just he's trying to save his own neck because he's still worried that Krishna's going to like really punish him, because till now he hasn't punished him. And so he's literally thinking that now Krishna's going to be like, all right, now you're going to get what you deserve. I'm going to call Yamaraj and you're going to get sent to hell and you're going to suffer for what you've done, like that. So that's what Indra's scared of. Yeah. Say it quick. All right. So yeah. So yeah. Krishna? Yeah. We're talking about Indra here, yeah, being afraid.
But there's another planet that he's knowing that your sort of moments are, and he would have been afraid.
We're not talking about Krishna. We're talking about Indra. It's a different situation. Yeah, so Indra is not totally convinced that Krishna is his well-wisher. And also Indra is attached to his position and his power. So he wants to hold on to that. So, but anyways, he's asking Krishna to purify him, his consciousness. So then somebody could ask, well, if Indra is asking Krishna to purify his consciousness, so he doesn't do these things again, then why doesn't Krishna purify his consciousness? Why does he continue doing these? I mean, Indra does these things repeatedly. Like later, after Krishna gets married to Satyabhama, then Satyabhama, she wants the Parijata flower. And so Krishna goes to the heavenly planets and he asks Indra for a Parijata flower. Indra's like, nope, these are only on heaven. They can't go to earth. Krishna's like, oh, really? Just watch. And then he just like uproots the whole Parijata tree and starts walking away with it. And so Indra's like, hey, not so fast. And he chases after him. And then there's a big fight. So if he actually understood that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of God and his Lord and Master and all these things, he'd be like, yeah, take all the Parijata flowers that you want. After all, it's all yours. You're the, you know, beneficiary of everything. And, you know, I'm just happy to please you in whatever way you want. So that wasn't, but that wasn't his mood. And so why didn't Krishna purify him of his false pride? Because Indra didn't really want to be purified. He just wanted to not be punished. So it's like he's speaking words with his mouth, but his heart is different. So that's what we have to be careful of. But, you know, we ask Krishna for one thing, but Krishna is in our heart. He knows what our heart is. He knows what we're actually thinking and feeling and desiring. Well, the thing is, what we can do is, let's say you want to be, let's say you want pure devotional service, but at the same time you have some desire, material desires and attachments. So then what you have to do is just like look at those desires and then express to Krishna that, okay, I know the desires are there and I know you know the desires are there, but please don't fulfill these desires. I'd rather just get rid of these. I don't really want what I want. So I really want you. I really want loving service to you. So if we make a conscious decision to not allow ourselves to be influenced by our material desires, and we ask for Krishna's and devotees' help with that, then Krishna will help us. Because then he'll see that we're actually sincere. Yeah? It's probably in the commentaries. Well, it's kind of like, Srila Prabhupada would say that, was it his father or was it Lord Chaitanya? I think it was Prabhupada would say that, you know, his father would sometimes have to punish him when he was naughty. But before punishing him, he would always say, I'm very sorry. I don't like to do this. Please forgive me, but it's my duty. I have to punish you. Like that. So yeah, so even when you have to punish somebody, you may feel bad about doing it, you know, because you don't want the person to suffer. You don't want them to be humiliated. You don't want them to be discouraged. You don't want them to, you know, be in anxiety, but you have to. So yeah, I'm sure that Krishna genuinely apologized. But he was teaching, the thing is, he was trying to smash the pride of Indra, remove Indra's pride. And also he was instructing the whole world, you know, that demigod worship is not necessary. You just worship Krishna. So that's another theme here. He was, okay. Now, yeah, so Indra's begging forgiveness and he's really worried because he just basically acted like a demon. So he speaks this word, he speaks this verse here, text 9, that Krishna, you descend into this world to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances. Oh Lord, but you simultaneously act for the welfare of those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. So he's saying basically like, you destroy the demons and you protect the devotees. And although I just really acted like a demon, but I'm a devotee. and then he starts really like emphatically offering obeisances to Krishna to prove that he's a devotee and not a demon. He's like, don't punish me. I'm not a demon. You have to protect me. I'm a devotee. He's trying to make that case about himself. So text 10, he's like, you know, namaha means to offer obeisances, or it literally means to bow. So he says, Namastubhyam Bhagavate, I bow down to you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purushaya Mahatmane, Vasudevaya Krishnaya, Sattvam Pataya, Namaha. Again, he says, he starts with Namaha and he ends with Namaha. It's like, I'm offering my obeisances to you, who's the Supreme Lord, the all-pervading super soul residing in the hearts of everyone and the chief of the Yadu dynasty. And then the next verse also, he continues with this. The next verse also ends with Namaha. He says, unto him who assumes transcendental bodies according to the desires of his devotees, unto him whose form itself is pure consciousness, unto him who is everything, who is the seed of everything, who is the soul of everyone, I offer my obeisances. So here he's really trying to. And then now, because he just said that Krishna, he's just talking about how Krishna is the super soul in everyone's hearts. So then he's like, oh, wait a minute. He actually is a super soul. That means he knows what I'm thinking. He knows what I'm feeling. He knows that I'm being so fake right now. What to do? So it's like, I'm going to get myself in more trouble. So now he kind of lays a few more cards on the table, so to speak. In text 12, he says, my dear Lord, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of false pride. So now he's getting like deeper into the root of his issues. Thus, I tried to destroy your cowherd community with severe rain and wind. So there's a conversation here where Krishna's thinking, where Krishna might have said, interesting, Krishna might have said that, Indra, you're my devotee. How could you do such a thing? And so Indra replies, anything is possible for one who's bewildered by false pride. That's what he's saying here. I was fiercely angry because of false pride. And Krishna could reply, but when pride creeps up, an intelligent person must put it down by higher knowledge. And then Indra says, but my higher knowledge, my intelligence was bewildered by anger. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that you know, contemplate the objects of the senses, attachment develops, then lust arises, then memories bewildered, intelligence is lost, anger, and then, yeah, intelligence is lost. So he's saying, yeah, it's so he's kind of like explaining how he's actually a good person, he's actually a devotee, but he just got caught up in this, you know, downward spiral of things that started from false pride. But he's admitting to it, you know, he's admitting to it. So, and he says, and that's why I tried to destroy the coward community with all that rain. But Lord, you've shown me mercy by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempt to punish Vrindavan. And now I've come to you for shelter. So then Krishna, he's happy that Indra's approaching him for shelter. And even though Indra's mixed with his material desires and things, but Krishna's very kind. And so he speaks to him and says, thus glorified by Indra, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, had smiled and then spoke to him as follows in a voice resonant like the clouds. So on the one hand, he's smiling, which shows that, he's in a compassionate mood. He's happy with Indra. But at the same time, he speaks with a voice which is like thunder, resonant like the clouds. So he's like, okay, it's nice that you're approaching me like this, but it's still a very grave offense that you made. It's still a very grave situation. And so the deep resonant voice, and he explains to him, he says, Indra, he says, my dear Indra, it was out of mercy that I stopped the sacrifice meant for you. You were greatly intoxicated by your opulence as the king of heaven, and I wanted you to always remember me. So when I read this, I thought this was so sweet. You know, that Krishna is saying that the whole reason that I did this was that I wanted you to remember me. Because in your pride, in your vanity, in your like narcissism, you were just thinking about yourself and you had forgotten all about me. And I just wanted you to think of me. So when I read this, I remembered that, as I remember when I was young, I was about 14 or 15. And my little brother, I have a little brother who's 5 years younger. So whatever I wanted to do, I would always make him like do whatever I want. Like if I was going out running, because I was on the soccer team, so I had to run like 5 miles every day to get in shape for soccer. And it was summer, because soccer is like a fall sport. So at the end, like it was August, and I had to run 5 miles in the hot sun and all that. And I would always make my little brother come with me. And then just whatever I was going to do, whatever I wanted to do, I would make him do it with me. And it's not that he always wanted to. And in fact, that running, I mean, the poor kid nearly died. It's like, because he wasn't even athletic. You know, I was pretty athletic, but he was just this nerdy, like wimpy kid that like they just play with his little Star Wars guys and do like little, you know, chemistry experiments and collect bugs and stuff. And I'd be like, come on, put your sneakers on, we're going. And then at the end, he would just like flop out, you know, on the ground. He'd be lying there like. Anyways, so then like a few years ago, we were hanging out. I went to my father's place and my brother was there and we were talking about like all the stuff that we used to do together as kids. And I was like, Wally, remember I used to make you go running with me? He's like, yeah. And remember I used to make you do this? He'd be like, yeah. And remember I would always make you do that. Like I would just make him do everything. And he would do it. I was like, why would you always do it? Why didn't you just say no? You didn't have to do it. You know, like I wasn't going to force you to do it, but you just did it. And then you know what he said? He said, because I wanted you to like me. Aww. I know. It was so touching. I was like, what? I always liked you. He's like, I wasn't sure. Aww. And then I said, anyways, what did it matter? You know? He said, well, because, you know, I admired you so much. I thought you were just like so smart and so cool. And I wanted you to like me. I wanted you to. Yeah. So I was thinking that, like, you know, he was seeing me as, you know, somebody, you know, up here or something. And he was acting in such a way to try to get me to like him. So it's almost like that situation here, that Krishna is taking a very humble position. You know, like I did all this because I wanted you to remember me, because you are very important to me. You know, if I didn't care about you, I wouldn't have done this. I wouldn't be bothered if you didn't think about me, if you didn't like me, if you didn't remember me. But it's because I love you, because you're somebody that I value, that I appreciate, that's important to me, that I did this whole pastime just to bring you closer to me. So that's another nature of Krishna. Not only is he very humble, but everything that he does is just to try to increase his devotees' love for him. And we'll see that in the way he interacts with the gopis, you know, when he leaves them from the rasa dance, it's just to intensify their love. And he does that with us, you know, if you just kind of observe in your own life little things that happen. You know, Krishna, he orchestrates each devotee's life in such a way that it just brings out our love. It brings out more dependence on him and more gratitude towards him and makes us remember him. And that's Krishna's main mission, is just to get everyone to love him, because he knows that that's how we'll be happy. That's the only way that we'll be happy, is if we have a loving relationship with him. So, and then he says here that a person who is blinded by intoxication due to his power and opulence cannot see me. Because they're blinded. They see only power and me, and they're very self-centered. He says, if I desire that person's real welfare, I'll drag him down from his materially fortunate position. And there's that verse from the Bhagavatam 10.88.8. That's a very famous verse. That's yasyaham anugrinami harishye tad dhanam shanai. That Krishna says, the first installment of my mercy, or if I especially favor someone, then the first thing that I do is harishye dhanam. I take away his wealth. I take away some material assets gradually, shanai, gradually, so that the person possesses, the only thing that the person possesses is me. He just has me. So we see that he doesn't do this for Indra. He doesn't actually take away Indra's wealth or his power or his position, none of it. So why not? Because Indra wasn't ready for that. That's not, you know, Indra wasn't desiring that. He wasn't praying, you know, like we see many others, like even Brahma, he prays, may I be a pure devotee, may I, you know, whatever, all these, like Uddhava, he prays, may I be a blade of grass in Vrindavan so I can get the dust of the devotees on my head, and may I always have association of devotees. Indra doesn't pray like that. He's just like, forgive me and don't punish me. I'm your devotee. I'm not a demon. Like that. So Krishna's response to this is just like, okay, you know, just the next verse he says, okay, you may go now. Basically, like, all right, just go, just get out of here, you know. Remain in your position as king of heaven, but be sober without false pride. Yeah, Evan?
So it seems like Indra committed probably the worst offense against many devotees. He was trying to kill all of Krishna's intimate friends for 7 days. But Prabhupada, I mean, Krishna easily forgives him and doesn't punish him.
Yeah.
But Prabhupada has said, you know, if you offend the devotee might forgive you, but Krishna won't forgive you. So, how can you not make vows?
Well, here Krishna is forgiving him because he's approaching Krishna and taking shelter of him. And that's Krishna's promise, you know, like when Vibhishan approached Lord Ramachandra, he was on Ravana's side before, and then he defected over to Ram's side, and Ram just received him, you know, like, sure. You know, he just gave shelter to him.
If Krishna will forgive offenses against him, but he doesn't forgive as a man's devotee, like when that this person was seeking a guest, and then they broke their fast with water, and then they cursed them, and then he went to Lord Vishnu and said, "No, I can't forgive you.
Well, he didn't directly target a specific devotee. He wasn't upset with the devotee. He was just upset that, in general, that the Vrajavasis didn't do the sacrifice. He was mainly upset with Krishna. And he was trying to find, his idea was that he just wanted to punish the whole village. But he ended up not really offending anyone because he didn't hurt anyone. You know, Krishna just protected everybody. And in fact, the thing is that, like, this whole episode, just the Brajavasis were happy because they had a great time worshiping Govardhan Hill, and they had a great time under Govardhan Hill. If anything, they would be grateful to Indra for, you know, catalyzing this amazing, unprecedented pastime with Krishna. So all's well that ends well. And because the whole thing also happened because of Krishna's desire, like Krishna wanted this to happen.
His intention was to harm the devotee, but it didn't. Or harm the devotees didn't work.
Yeah.
So when our intention is to love the devotees, but somehow we end up harming them, offending them, is it really about the intention, or is it about if they're hurt or not?
Well, if we intend to love the devotee, generally Krishna sees the good. He always sees the good and overlooks the bad. That's another sweet quality of Krishna. So if we intend to love, but we end up hurting, Krishna will see that we intended to love. If we intend to hurt and we end up giving them pleasure, Krishna will overlook that we intended to hurt and he'll see that we gave them pleasure. Krishna always sees the good thing. So in this case, he overlooked all of Indra's faults because one, because Krishna still, Indra still wanted to be a devotee, still wanted to do his service, and he didn't really harm anybody, but he made a big festival.
What if there's no good? Like, what if you want to hurt a devotee and you hurt a devotee? And then you ask for forgiveness. Will Krishna just like never let you become a devotee?
No, if you ask forgiveness from the devotee, then, and if the devotee forgives you, then you're fine. Like with Durvasa and Ambarish, that's what happened, right? Yeah, Janaki?
In the Bhagavad Gita, where it's talked about like even the person who commits the most abominable act,
yeah,
as long as they like set their intention, sincerely wants to, you know, be it saintly or be good, then whatever they've done in the past,
you know, it's
forgiven.
Yeah. Worse than that, so.
You have to apologize, that's all, and ask forgiveness and serve that devotee and try to make it good. And that's basically what Indra did. He went there, he glorified Krishna, he paid his obeisances, he asked for forgiveness, he admitted his fault. He said, I'm happy to continue my service for you. Please let me continue. And so, yeah, Krishna's like, okay, just don't do it again. But he spoke very gravely, don't do this again. Okay, so then Sarabi was there. I'm going to wrap up now, just a few minutes. So Sarabi the cow was there, and she was observing all this. And she lives in the heavenly planets, and before she was thinking that Indra's great because he's the king of heaven. But now she's realizing that Krishna is the only real master. And she's actually pretty fed up with Indra right now because of his faulty leadership and because he just tried to kill so many cows.
Yeah.
And after all, she's a cow. And so, but on the other hand, Krishna is the protector of the cows, and he did protect them. So she's like, I think I'm going to switch over. I'm going to have Krishna as my master. And, you know, she lost her faith in Indra. So so she asks Krishna, she glorifies Krishna, and then she asks him, can you please be my Indra? Because Indra also means Lord. It just means Lord and master. So, yeah, she says, you are a worshipable deity. Therefore, O Lord of the universe, for the benefit of the cows, the Brahmins, the demigods, and all saintly people, please become our Indra. So then Krishna says, how can I be Indra? There's already, that post is already taken. So then she says, in the previous verse, she says, Vishvatman, Vishvasambhava, that you are... you're the Vishvatman, you're the soul of the universe, you're the source of this universe, you can be anything you want in this universe, so certainly you can be Indra. So then Krishna agrees, and they do this whole coronation thing. So Sarabi and the demigods, all the demigods come down, 33 million demigods, and then they do a bathing ceremony to coronate Krishna as the new Indra, and Sarabi bathes him with her own milk. So this is like really ecstatic for Sarabi the cow, because like she's right there with Krishna, she's seen this whole interaction, and now she's like bathing him with the milk from her own body, and it's very intimate like that. And the demigods also come, and they're bathing him with Ganga water, and then Indra's there, and Indra's like, oh my God, everybody's bathing Krishna, but he's feeling like, I'm an offender. He's like in the back, like slinking to the back, like, oh my God, I don't know if I want to, I don't know if I can do that. I feel so just like low and unqualified to do that. But then his mother's there, Aditi, and she pushes him forward. She's like, go there and bathe Krishna. So he does. he gets his elephant to suck up heavenly Ganga water and spray it onto Krishna. So that bathing happens there at a place called Govinda Kund. And Krishna, and they give him a name. So all the demigods, they bestow this new name on Krishna, the name Govinda. That's how Krishna gets named Govinda. Yeah. So we got to wrap it up. There's a little bit more here, but I'm just going to end it here. Da-da-da. You want to last a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens is, remember he left the cowherd boys? He said, I'm going to go around and check on the damage and go over now. So the cowherd boys are thinking, he's been gone so long. And what's going on around that hill? So they come over and they just catch the tail end of this bathing thing. They see the demigods are all there bathing Krishna. They've all given him so many gifts. Every demigod that came gave some transcendent, like heavenly gift. So there's a pile of presents there, jewelry and all these things. And then the cowherd boys, just when the cowherd boys are showing up, the demigods are leaving. And they go running to Krishna. And they're like getting all the ornaments and the nice silk. They're dressing Krishna up with it and they're putting it on themselves. And the demigods are just still in the clouds. And they're like, whoa, look at these boys, how they're dealing with Krishna. They're just joking and dressing him and like, you know, getting him all prettied up and stuff. And they're realizing how, you know, although they thought they were great demigods, that they're far inferior to even these little cowherd boys. And so they all go home like that, and they're carrying the parasol that one demigod gave, and they're fanning him with the chamara and the fan that the other demigods gave, and they're carrying all these items and precious jewelries and things. And so they get home, and Nandamaraj is like,
yeah,
what happened? Where you guys been today? You know, where'd you get all these celestial ornaments? So then the boys told how the demigods had come and done an abhishek on Krishna and coronated him as the King of Heaven. So then Nandamaraj was like, wow, that was a good idea. We should do the same thing. We should coronate Krishna as the Prince of Raj and do an abhishek. That's what my teacher told me. he called all the Vrajavasis. So it must be somewhere. Bhakti Prabhava Swami wouldn't make it up. It's in the Charyas or Garga Samhita or something. So he had a ceremony. They coronated Krishna as the Prince of Raj. They had an abhishek, everybody brought gifts, and they accepted that name, Govinda. Oh. So from then, Krishna is known as Govinda. What's that? You weren't paying attention, Evan. Now you got to hear the recording. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Govinda ki jai.